WISS Berlin, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation. A civic media station.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. E-shoppers opened their digital wallets this Black Friday to the tune of $10.8 billion, up more than 10% over last year, says Adobe lead digital analyst Vivek Pandey.
Given that discounts were quite strong across many categories, we saw strong spending on electronics, apparel, toys, cosmetics, and even appliances.
Small Business Saturday today, Vice President Kamala Harris stopped by a local D.C. bookstore.
What are you, like, loving right now?
This one.
Yes.
I've read about.
This is fantastic, right?
So good.
Okay. So I do want to get that.
Yeah.
You know what else?
Heading home, millions of Americans facing some dangerous weather, a massive storm system taking aim at the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic, dumping feet of snow in upstate New York. President-elect Donald Trump today announcing his son-in-law's father, Charles Kushner, as the next U.S. ambassador to France. This is ABC News. Customs and Border Protection announcing the largest ever seizure of counterfeit musical instruments. ABC's Brian Clark has more.
Gibson confirms that the 3,000 guitars seized by customs agents at the Port of Los Angeles Long Beach were fakes. Gibson's chief marketing officer called the seizure emotional and personal because of the protection of its players. One of its most famous players? Chuck Berry, who used a Gibson on his classic Johnny B. Goode and was buried with one of his Gibsons when he died in 2017. Federal authorities are investigating the shipment that they say would have been worth $18 million if the guitars were real. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Medrick Burnett Jr., a 20-year-old linebacker for Alabama A&M, has died from a head injury sustained during October's Magic City Classic against Alabama State. The redshirt freshman, originally from Lakewood, California, joined Alabama A&M this past summer after beginning his college football journey at Grambling State. Dave Packer, ABC News.
I'm Lisa Hale with WISS News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. You can find it anytime at the WISS website at WISS.FM.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
His name's Jeff Mandel, general counsel for Law Forward.
Mr. Gableman broke more ethics laws and rules than he followed. The attorney's oath here in Wisconsin is fairly long. Mr. Gableman had, in the course of the sham investigation into the 2020 election, violated every single sentence in that oath.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Alba Show.
Trigvi Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project.
We as individuals need to be far better in terms of getting the tools we need to have the conversations. You're never going to shame someone out of their political beliefs.
Yes.
You're never going to get them with talking points.
You nailed it. And I think that that's what some of our friends on the left don't get. And I think it's destructive and it's not beneficial.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
For 92.7 WMDX News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. The U.S. Supreme Court is deciding whether to review a Wisconsin case over the issue of gender identity in schools. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
The case Parents Protecting Our Children versus Eau Claire Area School District asked to strike down a school policy that the parents believe infringes upon their right to make major health-related decisions with their children. The district says its policy was created to provide direction and resources for transgender students and students with questions about their gender identity, including when they don't feel safe or accepted at home. Attorney Haley Archer with the ACLU of Wisconsin says the focus should remain on the children.
I believe one of the reasons that this question is debated is because it is complex. We're balancing the rights of parents, we're balancing the rights of schools, we're balancing the rights of students.
The parent group argues the school policy encourages kids to hide important aspects of their health, like changing pronouns at school. Lower courts have dismissed the case because none of the group's children are involved. Luke Berg with the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty represents Parents Protecting Our Children.
Children who have struggled with this and later come out of it have said, "It was not actually helpful for me to have adults around me affirming that I was really the opposite sex. It actually confused me further." And so this can do harm to children. And in our view, that's why parents need to be involved.
The Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health reports nearly half of LGBTQ youth in the state seriously consider suicide. Nationwide, those rates drop significantly for transgender and non-binary youth who feel accepted at home, according to the Trevor Project. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly sunny, breezy, highs near 16, mostly cloudy and breezy tonight with a low near 10. Mostly sunny for Sunday, highs near 27. 28 with some sun for Monday. Tuesday, partly sunny, 24. Chance of snow Wednesday, 28.
It's 21 right now.
This is the Fox Valley's Real News and Great Conversation, WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We hope you're having a great Thanksgiving weekend, but we do understand that dealing with those distant relatives can be a little tough. So Mark wanted to take some time to share his conversation with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Natalie Albert and discuss mental health during this holiday season. We'll be back next weekend with a brand new conversation featuring your host, Mark Becker. Enjoy your weekend and happy Thanksgiving.
Say you want a revolution. Well, you know.
What's up, everybody? You found it again. The Rational Revolution here on Civic Media. Mark Becker is your host. Hey, that's me. If you like what you hear, you can download the app wherever you get your apps. You know, I think I said last time it could be the Apple iStore or the correct one, the Google Play Store if you have a Samsung or an Android. But you can download the app, listen to all of the podcasts from our shows, from any Civic Media show. But right now, you have the Rational Revolution, and we have an awesome guest here. Today, we're going to talk about some pretty deep stuff, and we have Natalie Albert, award-winning journalist, author, and all-around badass here. Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Mark.
I'm excited. I'm nervous because this is some big stuff that you cover. You cover mental health for the USA Today Network.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, you are with the Press Gazette. That is coming to an end.
It is.
When?
That's a really good question. I feel like it's going to be this very natural end. I think it already has technically ended, and
really?
Technically already an employee with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, at least according to my pay stubs.
Yeah.
But I'm still going. It's a very unceremonious end because I'm still doing exactly the same thing, covering the same bases, and I'm still reporting things related to Green Bay.
Okay.
So it's just, I am merely broadening my purview to
That's
Milwaukee.
Cool. So are you moving down there?
I am moving to Madison.
Oh, you are? Okay, so you're going to work for the Journal Sentinel, but live in Madison. Mm-hmm. I suppose that would be good to cover, mm-hmm. you know, how laws are impacted. And
yeah, I think because I'm still doing statewide work, I'm still going to be paying attention to things happening outside of Milwaukee. Of course, I'm going to be going to the Milwaukee office.
Sure.
And I'll be traveling. I mean, not every day because I want to have my own sense of mental health. but I will be going in and to the Milwaukee office, but I'll also be able to, you know, focus on other cities as well, like Madison, like Green Bay, like Appleton, Oshkosh, Wausau.
Very cool. Yeah, I know, you know, your work here in Green Bay has been very, very well respected, and you've done a lot of big stories here. So, you know, we're definitely sad to see you go. But I think to do what you do on a bigger scale is always something that anyone in journalism would like to do. So, you know, we definitely wish you a lot of luck in that. So,
thank you.
Natalie Albert, how did you get into journalism? I always ask our guests, that's the first one. How did you get into blank?
Yeah, that's a great question. I am a late bloomer.
Oh, really?
I am. I started out as a creative writing person.
Okay.
I started by writing poetry. I have an MFA in poetry. I decided to go into teaching. So I was an academic. Yeah.
Really?
I taught poetry.
Like in school? College?
College.
No kidding.
Yeah. So I've taught at University of Wisconsin-Madison. I've taught at in the various SUNY systems in New York. I've taught, where else have I taught? I've taught in just like as a guest lecturer in institutions across the states. And yeah, that's how I got started. And I transitioned to journalism not too long ago. I decided I wanted to do more with my writing. And I got into this idea of poetry as witness, which is a concept where you write from observation and in a poem. And it comes from this poet named Carolyn Forché, who herself is a poet and journalist. And I've been very inspired by that type of discipline. So at some point I thought, can I do more with my writing? Can it affect change? I'd love to think that people read poetry and want to start a revolution. And sometimes it happens.
Yeah.
But sometimes poetry is in the wake of catastrophes, chaos. And so I thought maybe I can do more to prevent catastrophe by writing to a more common audience. Not everyone reads poetry. I am well aware of this fact. But I think everyone reads newspaper articles, or at least the, you know, preview to those newspaper articles on social media. So I wanted to make my focus a little broader. So I initially wanted to go back to school for health and environmental reporting. So that's what I did. I didn't really know what I was doing. I just applied to like the journalism programs I had heard of at Columbia and Northwestern, got into both. And I thought, wow, they're really expensive. And so now what? But I just decided, you know, it'll be worth it. Maybe I'll be paying debt for the rest of my life. but at least in journalism, you get paid very well.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh.
I know journalism is historically quite underpaid. The hours are really hard. Mm-hmm. The stuff that you deal with is very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a motto, unofficial model of journalism. You're underpaid, you're overworked, but on the plus side, everybody hates you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds about right.
Mm-hmm. So I was well aware.
Okay.
But I wanted to do it anyway, because I think I have a really good perspective on, I'd like to think I have a good perspective on things, being both someone that you know, thinks in a poetic or creative way, but can understand the science of things. So merging those things. The hardest part, of course, is finding common ground and being able to communicate that to anybody, not just someone who went to school for poetry.
Right. Well, no, and that's kind of what we try to do here a little bit is try to figure out, okay, you know, we might not always agree on everything, but you know, and then when we'll talk about this later in the broadcast, but even when facts are like you'd think that this is an indisputable thing and you know, how to toe that line, that's gotta be difficult. Now, were you from here originally, or where were you from?
I'm from New York originally.
Yes.
I have gotten such colorful nicknames as New York Natalie.
Oh, no.
But it's okay. It's okay. I love New York.
What part of New York?
I'm from Long Island originally. Oh, nice. And then I moved very quickly away from Long Island to the city and spent much of my youth adult life in the city. My mom would joke every time I came back from a Manhattan trip as a teenager, I had a new piercing because they don't care.
Right.
As long as you give them money, they'll pierce whatever. Right. And it doesn't matter what age you are. Yeah. Maybe that's changed. But yeah, so I had a very fun time growing up. I was definitely like one of those like goth alternative kids just like hung out in parking lots outside of diners.
I had a punk band growing up. I can respect that. And I love New York City. It's my wife and I went there for our honeymoon. It's such a beautiful place and such mm-hmm. a mix of everything.
It is a great place, and it's like both great and it's trash. Like, and that's part of what I love about it is like you get to take that deep like inhale of pee when you're like waiting for the subway. You're
there it
nothing,
is.
Nothing quite like hot pee in the summer.
So what brought you to Wisconsin was teaching, or what brought you here?
I thought he was just
No, that's fine.
I came here to actually for a poetry fellowship. I applied, forgot about it. It was this fellowship to teach at UW-Madison.
Oh, wow.
And to just really work on a poetry collection. And I applied, I forgot. And then I got a call from a 608 number. And I was like, why is Wisconsin calling me?
Oh, yeah.
And then I talked to a mentor, someone who would become a mentor figure, Ahmad Johnson, he's just such an amazing guy. He used to direct the creative writing program at UW-Madison.
Oh, cool.
He asked, have you ever been to Wisconsin? And I said, nope. I don't know if I know where it is on a map. Uh-huh. This is a very unfortunate part about being an East Coast person, you know. Take, for example, the fact that I feel like my parents still struggle with whether I live in Minnesota or Wisconsin. Like, they're like, I mean, they stopped. They
it's
figured
all a blur
it out.
It's Pennsylvania.
It their brain glitches and then they're in Chicago and then they're in California. You know, it's, but I love Wisconsin. I didn't know that this would happen to me, that I would move to Madison. I would fall in love with the lakes and nature, the fact that it didn't smell like pee.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Not smelling pee is cool.
Yeah, it smelled really nice. And I, instead of rats, there were bunnies.
And deer. Although we have some urban deer.
Yes.
I've
seen some.
That's a thing.
Mm-hmm. I saw one on a run the other day and it was beautiful. It was like running. I was trying to communicate I am not a threat, but it was definitely running away from me, but in the same direction as me. So I felt this like primordial
we're cool.
predation thing. Yeah, yeah. I was like, oh no. but I loved Wisconsin. I moved back to New York after the fellowship, but I loved Wisconsin so much that I came back, which I think came as a surprise to many people, including my friends and family. They were not expecting that, and nor was I. But I do really like Wisconsin. And when I went to school in Chicago for my master's, Wisconsin pulled me back.
Right on. Well, we're here talking with Natalie Albert. We're going to talk about some hard-hitting stuff and what she does now here on the other side of the break. We'll see you in a little bit. Come on, flat top, come moving up solar. He got juju eyeball. He won't hold a roller. He got hair down to his knee. Got to be a joker. He just do what he please.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for Matt and Air on Air.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life.
SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey Kay, a professor emeritus of democracy at the University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. Harvey, I know you're the big FDR expert.
1934, he decided that the inequality and the wealth accumulated at the top was a threat not only to the American economy, but also to the American democratic spirit, American democratic life. The
way sounds like history's repeating itself.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app.
Finally, a voice for real news and great conversation in the Fox Valley, WISS.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Be free, come together right now. Over me.
Welcome back, everybody, here on the Rational Revolution here on Civic Media. Mark Becker, hey, that's me. I'm your host, and we are sitting down with our wonderful friend, Natalie Albert. We were talking about where she was from and all of her background and everything. And we're going to talk about what she does now. So she worked for the Green Bay Press Gazette, covering a lot of big things. And she's really, you're focusing now on mental health in Wisconsin.
Yes.
What brought you to that?
A few things.
Was it an assignment from them, or was that something that you kind of said, this needs to be done?
Well, it's interesting because before I did mental health, I was the political watchdog reporter, as yes, maybe many listeners or some listeners know.
That does damage to your mental health.
I know. I was not doing well mentally, but mm-hmm. I always saw that beat as a stepping stone to something else. I went to school for health and environmental reporting. Yeah. And of course, so much can be done in watchdog reporting during COVID. So I was well primed to tackle public health and policy, all of that. But I don't love covering politics is something that I learned. It just wasn't for me. I never intended that to be for me. And when I realized that that was the direction I was going, I kind of did an SOS to my editors and said, this is not, I don't think I can continue doing this without imploding. Mm. And at that same moment, one of the editors said, you know, we're thinking about possibly creating a new position in mental health. And my eyes just like got really wide. And right. He was like, oh, yeah, okay, so you're going to take that job. And I was like, yes. So it was very serendipitous. But yeah, one big reason that I thought, wow, this is kismet is because I've always struggled with my own mental health. I've struggled with the barriers to access. I have been on the phone for hours and hours trying to find someone to help me. And both in Wisconsin and in New York, it's terrible.
Yeah.
And the worst thing that you can hear when you're in pain is that there's nothing they can do, or they can.
Help is on the way in 4 months.
Help is on the way in 4 months, or yeah, we can set you up with someone, but they're out of your network, or,
yes,
you know, someone is available right now and they're not good. Right. So there's all sorts of things that can go wrong. It's almost like you have to have wisdom of the inside going in.
Mm-hmm.
And that shouldn't be the case. You shouldn't have to mentally task yourself when you're mentally struggling. So when I got the job, I thought the big thing I want to focus on is access and why we need to do more to help people find the help they need. Hmm. And then COVID happened and supply is low and demand is high.
Supply was low before,
yes,
COVID.
Yes, it
right.
predates COVID. Right. But a few things happened that COVID enhanced, which is stigma started to reduce. Yes. People started to talk more about their mental health. And more people realized the pains that they were experiencing, the psychic pain that kept them up at night, that kept them routinely making the same mistakes, was about their mental health. It wasn't, there's nothing wrong with them.
It and they're was, not alone.
And they're not alone.
Yeah.
And so they probably did something like I did when I first realized I needed help, which is try to call somebody, try to reach out, learn, yes, we can see you in 8 months.
Yeah.
Or, yes, we can take your insurance, but there's a very high deductible.
Yeah.
Or,
we cover three visits.
Yeah, we cover three visits. Mm-hmm. We can see you for half an hour every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
This is a 15-week service. Or, you know, whatever the case, there was always, it always seemed like it was temporary or not soon enough. So the pandemic created an awareness that we were all struggling. And there wasn't enough workforce to manage everybody. I mean, when you look at a map of Wisconsin and look at the high need of mental health professionals, the entire state lights red.
Yeah.
You know, and red indicates bad.
is that unique to Wisconsin, or is ours worse than others?
No. No,
I mean,
it's not.
It's bad all
over. It's funny because we seem to be doing better than most states in of healthcare professionals, at least according to Mental Health of America's state survey. Like, we seem to have some of the best coverage. But contextually, when everywhere is bad, it's not that we're the best, we're just the least bad.
Right.
And that's not, you know, it's not sufficient to say that we're making the most of a very terrible system. I mean, it's better than other states, but we have in Wisconsin some really unique resources. We have some of the best institutions in the country, I think. And we have a really strong focus on healthcare in the state. And we also are a brain drain state, which means that people come here, they get educated, and then they leave to go to other places. It's not to no one's fault, right? You know, like, it's hard to convince somebody who has these big dreams of working in a city to work in the Northwoods. You know, it's really hard to appeal to people who are, maybe they're young, they're single, they want to meet somebody, have a family. And then there's a job opening in Ashland, and it's hard to convince people to do that. And those rural areas need the most help, but they're still struggling. Like, there's like tri-county support systems, like multiple counties coming together. But that also means that, say, someone that's living up in the North Woods, they might have to travel an hour to find services.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's just being generous. Yeah.
That's crazy. Here we're talking with Natalie Albert on the Rational Revolution about mental health. We're going to continue this discussion on the other side. We'll see you back in a little bit.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, home for the Todd Allball Show.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. E-shoppers opened their digital wallets this Black Friday to the tune of $10.8 billion, up more than 10% over last year, says Adobe lead digital analyst Vivek Pandey.
Given that discounts were quite strong across many categories, we saw strong spending on electronics, apparel, toys, cosmetics, and even appliances.
Small Business Saturday today, Vice President Kamala Harris stopped by a local D.C. bookstore.
What are you, like, loving right now? This one.
Yes.
I've read about.
This is so
fantastic, right?
It's so good.
Okay. So I do want to get that.
Yeah.
You know what else?
Heading home, millions of Americans facing some dangerous weather, a massive storm system taking aim at the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic, dumping feet of snow in upstate New York. President-elect Donald Trump today announcing his son-in-law's father, Charles Kushner, as the next U.S. ambassador to France. This is ABC News.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Bucks basketball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Milwaukee Bucks host the Washington Wizards at Fiserv Forum. Head coach Doc Rivers asked how Chris Middleton is doing after surgery on both ankles this summer.
It went great. Yeah, he's progressing. I keep saying it, but you can ask as many questions you want. It's not going to make him come back faster.
NFL, the Packers start practice tomorrow preparing for Thursday night's game in Detroit against the Lions. College football, the Badgers losing at home to Minnesota 24-7. Head coach Luke Fickell on finishing the season with a losing record of 5-7.
We got a lot of work to do, and there's only one way. Understand this. Everybody can say recruiting. Everybody can say go transfer portal. All those things that we'll do, but there's one way to get better at this freaking game, and it's to freaking work at it, and it's to play it, and it's to go out there and perform. You don't just get better practicing. You don't just get better watching film. And if we don't go out and perform and play, then our ass ain't going to get any better.
That's Wisconsin's head football coach, Luke Fickell, with Sports on Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, partly sunny, breezy, highs near 16. Mostly cloudy and breezy tonight with a low near 10. Mostly sunny for Sunday, highs near 27. 28 with some sun for Monday. Tuesday, partly sunny, 24. Chance of snow Wednesday, 28.
It's 21 right now.
Do you know or work with kids who have special healthcare needs? Help them live their best lives. Contact Wisconsin Wayfinder Children's Resource Network. Our specialists will connect you with services in your area. Wisconsin Wayfinder is free and confidential. Call 877-947-2929 or visit dhs.wi.gov/WISCWAY. Connect today. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
It's the sound of a soda, considered one of the coolest things made in Wisconsin. Jolly Good has been around since the 1960s. Cryer Foods makes it in Random Lake, which is in Sheboygan County. But Cryer started as a canning company in 1913. What was being canned there? Sauerkraut? Peas? Beets? The answer coming up.
At Jolly Good, we believe in quality.
Soda turned into an important revenue stream when production at the canning company slowed in the colder months. So what was being canned there? Sauerkraut? Peas? Beets? All three, plus juice, soups, and more. By the 1960s, Cryer quit canning and went all in on Jolly Good soda.
For flavor and value, Jolly Good's got it.
The latest resurgence of Jolly Good makes it a slice of Wisconsin for yesterday and today. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
From the lakeshore to Lake Winnebago.
Door to Fond du Lac counties.
Northeast Wisconsin is special for many different reasons. I'm Lisa Hale.
And I'm Terry Barr. Family and fun.
Safe communities and friends. We're featuring all of it as part of New Wisco Weekend, a news magazine show just for you, and highlighting what makes the Fox Valley and Green Bay area a great place to live.
Join us.
New Wisco Weekend, Saturday mornings at 8, Sundays at 11 on WGBW and WISS and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Mark Becker here with the Rational Revolution. What's up, revolutionaries? We got dear friend Mike Madrid. Sorry I cut you off there, but you were talking on the other side about Mexican schools and what happened there.
Yeah, so throughout the Southwest, early in the 1900s, there we had school segregation, no different than you had with black and white segregation in the South. And again, this is a story that's not often told or made much aware of, but the actual court case in the federal jurisdiction that overturned segregation was not Brown versus Board at first. The first court case was a California case called Mendez versus Westminster, which eliminated Mexican schools, the segregation of schools. And actually, Thurgood Marshall filed an amicus brief, understanding that that case would be precedent for Brown versus Board.
Well, I had no idea. That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think a lot of this history, unfortunately, because of the dark times that may be coming, will start coming to light about the Mexican impacts of what happens during a dark period of history in our country.
Well, I want to talk about what's coming because, so, you know, the Trump famously in 2016 said he was going to build the wall, Mexico was going to pay for it, LOL, right? But he also promised mass deportations. He failed on both accords. Is this different?
Well, I mean, look, it depends on what the definition of mass deportation is. Do I believe he will crack down on trying to get some of the most violent offenders out there? And they are there, incidentally. Yeah. No one is suggesting that everybody here is, you know, an angel. They're not. And there needs to be a process where that is remedied. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. Mm-hmm. The question is, does it go beyond that? And what now? Look, I would never bet that Donald Trump would do the right thing for humanitarian reasons. Uh-huh. But for economic reasons, with a lot of his wealthy friends, a lot of the industries in this country are reliant on this labor. That's why people are here. So whether it's agricultural farming and picking, or whether it's processing or meat packing in the Midwest, you go on and on and on. The hotel industry, the service sector is overwhelmingly reliant on undocumented labor. That's why there are 20 million workers here. So, are those interests going to just say, okay, well, we'll let these folks go and then quadruple our labor costs? Highly unlikely, highly unlikely. But it's also, by the way, if you were to do that, extraordinarily inflationary.
Oh, my God,
would explode. So there's a lot of economic reasons why he would not. But he's not going to do the right thing because it's the right thing.
Right. You know, it's interesting. So here in where this show is recorded in Green Bay, Wisconsin, we have a huge meatpacking company. We have a couple of them. And I drive past on my way home every day past a massive dairy farm. And it's not white guys out there at 8 o'clock at night milking cows and shoveling manure. You know, it's not.
Yeah. Of course it's not.
And it's so funny because every time I've talked to someone about, oh, they're taking our jobs, it's like, you're not going to do that. Tell me you're going to do that.
Under any circumstance, no matter what the pay wage is, you will not do that job.
Right.
And that's what we have to recognize is that's a foundational part of the economy. The dairy industry is foundational to what we do. It's not like you're making, you know, doorstops. This is necessary. And so once these economies become crippled, you're going to have a public reaction. And that's why I'm convinced that the economic interests that are reliant on this labor won't allow it to happen. Now, we'll see. I think there's going to be a lot of discussion and tension. But the reality is there's not a lot of white guys waiting in line to grab those jobs, shoveling manure in the middle of the night.
So he's going to do the right thing for the white guys and keep those people here, right? That's what his plan is.
If that's kind of the history of the country, and that's why I wrote this Substack,
right?
Because this is not new. This is a story as old as time. As old as the country.
He talked about like using the military. Like, is that legal? Can he do that?
Well, like I said, it's been done before. And the way you get around it by saying legal is you declare these enemies of the state.
Oh.
And that opens up a whole different can of worms. It's kind of like what we did with the Japanese in turning the Japanese, right? Is you say that this is, you know, a domestic terrorist plot, and you know we think that you know whatever rationale you can come up with begins the that's how you get the ball rolling with engaging the military. And remember, in both of these mass deportations, the military was used,
right?
So there's precedent for it. Presidents have done this before And if there's ever a president who would do it again, he's the one who's going to be sworn into office on January 20th.
I think, and one thing that, I talked to you about this before we were on the air. One of the things that I want people to do, and what I do with this show, is to try to educate and arm people with, how to see this for what it is. As we talked to Mike Madrid here, who's an expert on this stuff. How can people cut through the dog whistle stuff about, stand back and stand by and all this other stuff? I talk to people and they say, well, he can't control who supports him. He can't. How can they see the racism for what it is?
Well, I think the first thing is to call it on the carpet, because you absolutely can control it. Whatever you think of his policies, Ronald Reagan spoke out against the David Dukes in the party.
Yep.
Barry Goldwater's whole movement was predicated on driving white nationalists, white supremacists, and John Berkshire's out of the party.
Yep.
So it is a complete fabrication to say you can't determine who supports them. You can delineate morally why these people should or should not be standing for you. So to me, that's kind of the most offensive moral capitulation, is to say, well, you can't help it if the racists support you. Yes, you absolutely can.
Yeah, you can.
Okay? And so the fact that he doesn't tells us everything that we need to do. But what I would also suggest is this. If you're in a debate or discussion with people and or him or whoever else about how this can or can't be done, you're already losing this fight and allowing this to be held on false pretenses, because you don't see people of moral standing with racists supporting them. You don't see people of good character with the Proud Boys behind them.
Yeah.
And so that you don't need to justify your natural instincts and righteous indignation. It's there for a reason. We all know that it's wrong. He knows that it's wrong, incidentally. And so that I think is becoming part of the character test of this nation at this moment in time. And it's what we have to struggle with to kind of demand that this be a better part of who we are.
Yeah, I said this last week on the episode that we talked a little bit about that. And I said, if you walk into a room of Trump supporters and on the right you see, white nationalists and the Proud Boys, and then on the other side you see, anti-gay, Moms for Liberty, hate groups and all of that, you're standing in the wrong room.
Right. That's exactly it. It's like back in 2016, we would say, I get asked all the time, are you calling all Trump supporters racist? And I'm not, I'm not saying all Trump supporters are racist, but I'm saying all the racists are Trump supporters.
Right.
So I mean, if you walk into that room, we all have that spider sense tingling that this is not right. Trust that, because that's why that's there.
Right.
You know when something is not right. And that was actually the speech I gave at Cooper Union at the 150th anniversary of Reagan's speech. It was literally called this, this is not right. That was the message. We don't need to explain it. You know it's not right. And Republicans do know it's not right.
Well, and they're not all Trump supporters are racists, but they certainly don't have an issue with being on the same team as them.
Yeah, exactly right. They're comfortable with it now.
Right. And so
or always were,
yes.
By the way.
Right. Yeah. Right. Pass it off as, well, he can't control it. So how do you think this time would be different than 2016 with him actually being able to go through with some pretty dark stuff?
Well, I do believe two things. One, I believe that I think incompetence really saved us the last time.
Mm.
And I think that there's some elements to that this time. Remember, as I mentioned, I think in the early part of the discussion, in 2016, he surrounded himself with at least some establishment figures who had a basic concept and philosophy and understanding of government. This is not the case. Matt Gaetz, Tulsi Gabbard, RFK Jr., these are not serious people who are interested at all in advancing the cause of America. That is obviously problematic and horrifying. But at the same time, that leaves the opportunity for resistance, because remember, this interregnum period between the election and the swearing in is sort of a helpless moment. Joe Biden is the president, and all we're doing is responding to stories. Once he becomes the president of the United States, you are going to see the resistance, the opposition, consolidate swiftly and strongly I believe that's to my core. And now what you're going to see is less competent actors running the government responding to that political pressure. And you're going to have a lot of people in the business community saying, you know what? The instability of this government is not good for business. You're going to have to, because it's not, by
no.
the way.
Right.
Everybody in the world's biggest market is the United States. Having us unstable is not good for business. He is going to be responsive to that. It's why people stepping up and voicing their concerns and being good, active, responsible, moral citizens is extremely important in the coming years.
So what can people do?
Well, I think a lot of it is we keep doing what we have been doing. And like I said, the difference between an election and civil, protest is an election is about a hypothetical. It's about what you want it to be. Civil protest is about the factual, the actual, what is actually happening. Those are two very, very different considerations. And when things do begin to start happening, you are going to see people getting up and speaking out and not being afraid to speak out, which is the most important thing. There's going to be a fear that if I say something, then I'll be on a list, so they're going to come out and get me. That's how authoritarianism wins. And the stronger you are, the louder the chorus gets. So we have to remember that. You've got to know there are strength in numbers, and you've got to be one of those numbers being strong.
Yeah, I talk to people every week about, having the courage to say what needs to be said regardless. I think that's really important.
If not, it does get worse.
Right, right. And final thoughts about, how if this happens and this, what can good people do I didn't want to talk about this, but I have neighbors who he works in an assembly line at a plant. How can I help them?
Well, the first thing to do is ask, right? And be that voice, be that person. And I'm not trying to make an equivalency, but when somebody, when governments do start hunting people amongst them, it is only the neighbors, it is only the citizens around that can help. And whatever that may mean, it may mean finding a lawyer. May mean, offering some advice. It may mean calling a congressman that you know. It may be, it may mean more than that. But for the moment, I think the important thing is early in advance, is asking and letting people know, because there's extraordinary fear right now. There's terror in households right now in America. As much as so many of us are unsettled, there is sheer terror in many, many neighborhoods in this country. And letting them know that you are an ally and a supporter and somebody who can give them safe haven regardless of what they need, it would be incredibly comforting at this moment and would probably pay off with big dividends in the coming weeks and or months.
Yeah, and I never... What a surreal thing to be talking about.
Yeah, but this is our moment. It is surreal. This is something that we thought was behind us, but we have to remember that history rhymes. It never goes away. This will never be eliminated from the face of the earth as long as there are human beings. That's not the way this works. But what is required is each of us to do our part at this moment in time. And history has told us if we meet the moment, we will come out of this better and stronger. We will.
I believe that too, and I cannot thank you enough for your time here today. I can't thank you enough for your activism and for what you're doing and for your voice, bringing voice to millions of people. Seriously, it's amazing.
You're doing the same thing, and that's what it's all about. So I appreciate you. I appreciate your audience. I appreciate the engagement. Check out that article on Substack.
Yes.
It is a little bit jaw-dropping. Educate yourself on what has happened in the past. Be armed with that. This is not hypothetical. There's evidence on how it was done and actually how to respond. So let's learn from those successes too.
Awesome. Mike Madrid, thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate you, buddy.
Thank you. You bet.
All right. We'll be back right after this on The Rational Revolution.
A new choice. The Fox Valley's real news and great conversation. WISS.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots.
Woot, woot!
now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
James Rundy.
I decided to throw off all my wild and crazy short film ways and make a straight up documentary about my uncle. He was one of the small time dairy farmers across the state that were kind of the backbone and why we got our state's name, America's Dairyland.
It was called The Last Milk. Have you ever milked a cow?
Oh, yeah.
I'm curious, but I'm scared to do it because I'm worried I might like it.
All right. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, WISS, the Valley's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. We got Mark Becker here. I'm your host. We're with Natalie Albert, columnist for the USA Today, talking about mental health. We were talking about doom and gloom and all the things that have been going wrong and what's hurting in our communities. Well, but you mentioned something on the other side. You said that this is a community awareness mm-hmm. issue. Mm-hmm. And so I want to talk about, you know, how do we address this as a community?
Yeah. So it's important that we talk positives. You know, I think people are much more keen on listening to positives that are coming from this. Studies do suggest that we respond well to positive news. And so some positive news that we have about mental health, teachers are more and more engaging with mental health awareness and education. So I know that in summer times, a lot of school districts will get together to teach how to have more awareness over symptoms and risk factors that they should be keen to observe. And if they're not comfortable, say, like, I mean, most high school, middle school, elementary school teachers, they're probably, you know, the reason they got into teaching at the grade level isn't to monitor people's mental health. It's to teach calculus.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But, you know, this is a way for them to be able to identify, okay, like, if grades suddenly drop or someone in class is suddenly not communicating, if they're not showering and it's very clear, if they're not showing up to class, these are all signs that something's wrong. And so here are the proper steps you can take. And so that's been improving quite a bit.
One of the things that I think is interesting because I, you know, in my time in politics, I've interacted with a lot of reporters and I know that like you have to balance, you know, wanting to cause change with calling balls and strikes in this role. How do you, cause I know this is a passion of yours. Mm-hmm. How do you try to impact the issue as a whole, but balance that with, this is where we're at.
Mm-hmm. It is hard. It is hard to have to write the same stories over and over again.
Right.
But I think, as you know, you said earlier, and this, people take liberties at facts, but facts do matter. If you just keep giving the same facts over and over again, that 1 in 4 kids are struggling with their mental health, that 1 in half of girls are contemplating suicide. These are numbers.
Half
are contemplating suicide. There is a pervasive sense of hopelessness and sadness in schools. And, you know, and it's worse for marginalized students. It's and you know, all of these factors they're coming from students. They're not randomized studies that are estimations of what kids are going through. These are surveys that are conducted throughout high schools in Wisconsin. And it is concerning. I can't not be passionate and scared for young people. And I don't pretend some idea that I'm objective about whether I want a child to be well. I think it's important for me to look directly at people when I say this child is suffering. I don't care how we spin it. This is a kid in pain. And what, as a politician, are you going to do to help lift up this generation? There shouldn't be politicians out there that could look at those numbers and think, that's fine.
Meh, right.
Yeah. And if there are, I do want people to know that, mm-hmm. that that's the case. You know, we do need more people paying attention to an issue that has been historically unrecognized or underrecognized. So I will keep repeating stats. I will keep repeating facts. I will keep telling narrative stories that are human driven about where we are with kids, where we are with women, with older adults, with LGBTQ people, with marginalized folks. Like, it's so important to keep repeating it.
What can we do as a society? What can I do, or Todd, the God, the producer, do? What can we do?
Be kind, you know, and open and not judgmental of what someone else is going through. And, you know, if there are programs at your schools, if there are referendums coming up that could put more money into mental health programs, look into that, or ask leaders of schools, like, what are the mental health programs that exist and what needs to happen to get mental health programs at my school? And chances are they'll say, we need money. Mm. And so get involved, like, become a community voice and tell the story of people who are struggling. Tell the story of Sammy, the 10-year-old, and all the other children who are at risk right now, because there are so many who are at risk. Mm-hmm. There are a lot who aren't, and that's awesome. I just feel like it's harder and harder as a reporter for me to find those kids.
Oh gosh. Yeah. I couldn't even read the article because I'm like, oh my God, mm-hmm. I can't, mm-hmm. you know, cause it's so difficult. And I think, you know, if there's a takeaway from our conversation, I hope it's that we all are in this together, and we have to, you know, have mindfulness, something that we try to teach our kids. Mm-hmm. Be kind, be mindful. Mr. Mm-hmm. Rogers, right?
Mr. Rogers.
Who's the Mr. Rogers today?
Right. And one other thing I want to just mention before we go, this isn't a political issue.
No, right.
It is the least political.
Yeah.
It risks becoming political, but I sat at a table with a Republican senator recently, and we had a very amazing conversation about what needs to change. And at no point in the conversation did I think this is a, you know,
He's not sincere.
Oh. I've had conversations with Democrats and had the same takeaway. This is not a partisan issue. This is a human issue. And as long as it stays a human issue, we can make change.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for what you do. Thank you for what you do for the state. Thank you for what you do for our kids. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rational Revolution, guys. Thank you very much. We'll see you next week.
Bobby thumbed a diesel down just before it rained and rode us all the way to New Orleans. I pulled my harpoon out of my dirty red bandana. I was playing soft while Bobby sang the blues.
From Oshkosh to Nina, this is 98.3 WISS.
Ooh. Oh no, stomach issues again?
Stomach issues? Who are you?
Your pancreas. I could be the real reason for your diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose oily stools.
I thought it was my stomach.
People often do, but any of these symptoms could mean having a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and speak with your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Thank you for listening to WISS Berlin, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.